I'm Cable Flame. I have to admit, this is my first time speaking a formal talk, so forgive me if I'm a little bit nervous. As he said, this is Hacking the Mind, Hacking the Body Pleasure. I spoke about sexuality 2 years ago here at Hope in the informal talk, and I had so many people say, you should do it again, you should do it again, that I'm like, all right, what the hell, I'll do it again. Couple things, words of warning before we start. This is a talk about human sexuality. It is not pornographic, however, it will contain frank discussions on sexuality, BDSM, kinky stuff, hypnosis, and other things like that. So if you're not comfortable hearing these things or talking about these things, there are two other lovely talks going on right now. I recommend you go listen to them. Also, being in this room means that you are stating that you are of age of consent for this area, and if you're not, I also unfortunately have to ask you to leave now, because I'm just covering my butt. Also, my non-existent lawyers tell me that I should say that I am not a doctor. Okay, I am a mad doctor, but I'm not a real doctor. Therefore, none of this is to be construed as medical advice. So, obviously, most people here are going to be hackers, and there's many different things and ways you can hack things. The most common one everyone thinks of is computer hacking. You know, how do I get into this box? How do I do this? How do I do that? But there's other forms of hacking too. You can hack just about anything. There's, as the people in Live Journal Community 2600 Cuisine know, there's kitchen hacking. You know, you come home at night, there's three things in your cabinet, and you have 30 minutes. Let's throw something together that tastes good. It's another form of hacking. And in this way, we can also look at sexuality. I'm going to be covering two main types, body hacking and mind hacking, and some of the subjects that I'm going to be covering will cross over into both. I'm going to start with body hacking. I'm going to be covering, in case you don't know this, I pretty much signed myself up for talking about pretty much twice the amount of stuff that I can actually cover in this time slot. So as I believe he mentioned directly afterwards, we're going to have a more in-depth discussion over in the informal track. Right now, I'm just going to go over everything really briefly, really quickly to try to get it all in. Please come on over and join us and give us your thoughts, too, because I'm not the only one who knows anything about sex, obviously, up here. I want to have everyone's thoughts and opinions and their experiences. So I'm going to start with body hacking. I'm going to be covering sex toys and their usage, BDSM, body modifications, and tele and technodildonics. Let's start with sex toys. There are a wide variety of sex toys on the market out there today. Some of them are good, some of them are not so good. It all depends on the manufacturer. There are people who just put these out to make a quick buck. They say that they sell novelties and things like this. Because of here in America, we don't have any kind of government regulation of sex toys. There's nothing that looks into this, so they can just pretty much put out whatever they want with not too much regard to whether this is safe for a person. So you're going to encounter a number of different types, a number of different quality of sex toys. I'm pretty much going to put them into two main categories right now. I'm going to put in insertables, which are also pretty much better known as dildos, and vibrators. Let's start with dildos. There's many different places you can insert things. You can insert things into the vagina. You can insert things into the rectum, into the anus. Dildos, you can find them in a wide variety of different materials that they're made out of, and this kind of starts getting into the more like techie sex stuff, because some of the materials that they're made out of nowadays is really high tech stuff, and it's only stuff that's been invented in the past, even 3 years I can think of. You can buy a cheap jelly dildo. I'm sure you've all seen the interesting kind of solar panel flowery exhibit with the different sex toys in the front. The big one, the one with all the ones that are hanging here, there, and everywhere. These are made out of jelly. Many of these toys are made out of something with so many different chemical components, like there's like over 200. There are people who are calling for these kind of dildos not to be made anymore because they have something called phthalates, which in the UK, I believe it is, they're not allowed to use in children's toys if they get chewed on because of the chemicals that come off of this. You know how they have, I don't know if anyone noticed, but they have this smell. It's called outgassing. It's where they're putting off the chemicals. These things have been known to possibly cause cancer in people, and the walls of the vagina and the walls of the rectum have even more mucous membranes than the walls of the mouth. And so there are many companies, many very reputable companies, that won't sell these anymore. There's also silicone toys, which unfortunately I can't point you to ones in the lobby. These are really wonderful toys. They conduct heat easily. They conduct cold easily, so you can stick them in your freezer. You can warm them up a bit, and they'll hold that. They conduct vibrations like no one's business. And no, I'm serious. You take a vibrator, you put it on the one, and you kind of feel the end of it. And then you take a vibrator and you put it on the end of the silicon one, and it's like night and day. It's ridiculous. It's wonderful. where was I? Okay, yes, sorry. This is loud because I'm talking about sex. It's because I'm actually rather nervous. One of the wonderful things about, one of the best things about silicone is that it's easily sterilized. You can put it in your dishwasher. I'm not kidding. You can put it in your dishwasher with the rest of your dishes. You can boil it. I always call it, remember the children's story, stone soup? Yeah, I always call it, I'm making dildo soup. And if you have an autoclave, you can put them in an autoclave. So these toys are great for penetrative play. There are some that are specifically made to hit the G-spot, which is part of a woman's vagina. And it's a spot that in many women can bring about great pleasure. Some women it does, some women it doesn't. Pretty much an overall thing I'm going to say for the entire talk here is experiment. Play around. Play around with yourself. Play around with a partner. Play around with multiple partners. Talk to your partner. Find out what they like. Try something. If it works, fantastic. If it doesn't work, try something else. It's pretty much like the overall thing I could say if you really want to hack sex well. Just keep trying and find out what works for you. There are also toys that are made specifically to be put up a man's rectum to stimulate the prostate. And okay, before I get anything here, one, anal sex does not make you gay. Absolutely not. Anal sex makes you a human being. Many, 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 many people throughout all of time have put things up their butts and liked it. Women, men, and none of the above have put things up their butts and liked it. The men have the prostate, which, oh crap, this room doesn't have a thing to draw on. That's okay. It's inside the anus. It's kind of, let's say you have a man on his hands and his knees. It's the easiest way. If I had a guy here, put your finger, how about here, where you can actually hear me. Put your finger in and go like that. Kind of, it's like a come here motion downwards. Yeah, as I've said once about one of my lovers, you know, if I want to make him come, we fuck, we do whatever. If I want to make his eyes roll up in the back of his head, and his knees go weak so that he ends up like falling face forward on the bed, I put my finger in his ass. Many men have loved prostate stimulation all throughout the ages, and it's something that if you've never played with, I highly recommend. A couple things you need to remember though about that. Go very slowly. Start with something small. You're not, remember that giant butt plug in the center? Yeah, no, that takes working up to. Use lots of lube. There's no such thing as too much lube. Well, technically there is, but for the most part, there's no such thing as too much lube. Go slowly. Everything I'm going to be talking about here, I'm going to assume that you're going to use safe sex practices with this. You're going to use barrier methods to keep viruses and diseases from transmitting. If I don't have time to go into this in this talk, unfortunately, if any of you have any questions about this, please come up to me, let me know. I will send you to websites. I will teach you about it because this is something that everybody needs to know. But you can do these things and you can bring about great pleasure in men and women. I also highly recommend, I'm getting ahead of myself, I'm sorry. Vibrators. There are many types of vibrators out there, and the main two types that I've seen so far have been vibrators that use batteries or vibrators that plug into the wall. The ones that use batteries are usually cheaper. Some people really like them. I think they personally feel more buzzy to me. The ones that plug in the wall have a more all-over vibrating effect it's more like shake, 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 as I once...
They're like the subway.
Kind of like the subway. Yes, kind of like the subway. As I described it once when I picked up a Hitachi Magic wand, I turned it on, I put my hand up against it, I said, fuck, this thing can shift tectonic plates. Right now I'm going to speak about women and other people with clitorises. There are many women who like, don't laugh, there are many people of many different genders. There are many, many women who like a specific product, and I'm not big on plugging products, but it's called the Hitachi Magic Wand. Personal testimony here, I was having, if I was lucky, 3 orgasms a year. I bought one, I started having one a day. It completely changed my world. I became a more relaxed person. I wasn't constantly trying to, with my partners, always being worried about coming to orgasm. It was wonderful. I highly recommend a Hitachi Magic Wand to anybody. They run between about $40 and $60, and they last for about, from what I've heard, 10 years. Women have been using them since, I think, 1960s or the 1970s to get themselves off. So it's a very tried and true product. Let's see here. Oh, I was going to say about vibrators. Vibration up the anus is a wonderful thing, as I already mentioned for the, for the prostate. Another thing is good there, but it's also good for women because you get the vibration here, and the wall is the same. This side's the vagina, this side's the rectum. So if you have a vibrator up the anus and a vibrator in the vagina, you're vibrating both sides of that wall, and that's a pretty intense feeling. All right, the next thing I'm going to talk about is BDSM. It's a term that's been bandied about for quite a long time. It's an acronym. It stands for many things. Bondage and discipline, domination and submission, sadism and masochism. There are people basically who lump any kind of play that isn't, quote, normal or vanilla or just plain sex into BDSM. There are many different types here. I'm just going to broadly cover lump them into categories. You have sensation play. So where you have things like you tell your lover to close their eyes and you take a piece of rabbit fur and you rub it over their body and it feels really good. When you close your eyes, you're kind of blocking some of the input so that you could focus more on what's happening on your body. You could take an ice cube and, if their eyes closed, touch it here and maybe touch it on their leg and touch it here, and they don't know where it's coming next. Pleasurable sensation play. There's also painful sensation play. I will get more into pain for pleasure later. But there's pain for the sake of pain, people who genuinely like pain, their brains are just wired this way. And then there's pain that is used in a way to release endorphins to make it feel really, really good. A very good example of painful sensation play I can recommend or just pull off the top of my head is something called a Wartenberg wheel. It's basically a little handle. It's something that's used by the medical profession to test nerve sensitivity and to see if there's any kind of nerve damage. It's a pinwheel. It's really, 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 really spiky on the end, the little spikes. The pinwheel's about as big as a quarter, I'd say. And you can run it over your lover's body and it makes little prickles all over. Another form of BDSM is impact play. We're talking about things like spankings, paddlings, floggings, things like this. I said I'd go back to pain for pleasure. What happens in the body is anytime any kind of injury is done to the body, whether you're doing BDSM or you just stub your toe, your body immediately sends out endorphins, and it starts sending out endorphins so that the pain doesn't hurt as much, or at least it doesn't feel like it hurts as much. And this is a lot of what BDSM uses to bring the pleasure about in your body. It's something that kinksters use, and they use it to their advantage. Another form here is electrical play. Using electricity to stimulate the body, and I'll admit this is not something I know much about because personally it's really not my cup of tea. But there's something called a violet wand, and it's a machine, and there's like a glass tube that comes out of it, and sometimes it has a ball on the end. And what goes on in the tube is, looks a lot like a plasma lamp, and it's purple, and it causes mild shocking sensations on the body where you touch it. There's also an adapter that you can put onto it that then you can use it as, you can put like the paddle, sorry, stand by the mic. You can put the paddle like here on the side of your body, and then you become the violet wand, and then you can touch them, and it gives little sensations out of your fingers or wherever you touch them at. It is pretty cool. I am a I'm a kinky person myself. I go to the clubs, and it's really cool to watch people play with it. Sometimes they'll also find like all sorts of interesting things that they'll use that conduct electricity for this. You'll find like little metallic pom-poms people will use, and they'll just kind of run it over someone's body, and you see the little shocks going off. It's so neat. There's something called a TENS unit. I'll admit, I don't know much about TENS units. I believe that they send current to the muscles, muscle stimulation, and I'm sure that with enough study out here that a number of electrical engineers could probably build one themselves. If you're interested in this, there's a fabulous book on this called The Toy Bag Guide to High-Tech Toys. Highly recommend it and the rest of the Toy Bag series. All right, moving on to body modifications. Now, people have been modifying their bodies for thousands of years for a wide number of reasons, just from the amount of, you know, tattoos and piercings and people with funny colored hair that I've seen so far. Obviously, you guys are well aware of the different reasons that people might modify their body, for beauty, for pleasure, for some kind of ritual purpose. People will get piercings for increased sensitivity. Popular places for this are the nipples, the labia, the clitoral hood, and various parts of the penis. And the people who get these piercings definitely do. Some people say that it actually decreased their sensitivity, but I found that there are more people who say that they got piercings, especially in their nipples, and it really increased the sensitivity that they felt. And they can twist them a little, tug on them, pull them a little. Maybe a partner will take their teeth and kind of grab onto the ring and just, you know, mess with it a bit. Kind of like a dog turned on a bone a little. There are people who will do, and this is more advanced BDSM, people who will do cuttings using scalpels to put different designs in the body. They will do scarifications, where they will do cuttings multiple times so that it intentionally leaves a scar, or they might mess with the scar a little bit, but in that you really have to be careful so that it doesn't get infected. And there are people who do brandings, yes, with a hot branding iron. A lot of these are done by people who consider themselves urban primitives or other forms of like neo-tribal type stuff. A lot of these are done in the situation of a specific kind of ritual kind of environment. However, there is a form of body mod that is a temporary one, and it's called what's known as play piercing. It is where the body is pierced with hypodermic needles of whatever width you want to use, and it is used specifically to pull out that endorphin response. I personally have done it, and I will say that it is one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had in my entire life, and it is one that I will do again and again. It sounds scary. It's all done on the surface of your skin. It doesn't really go deep at all. It's nothing like getting a shot at the doctor. I hate getting blood or getting a shot at the doctor. It's not like that. Oh, it's horrible. But this is wonderful because of the specific kind of trauma that it does to your body. It really, really kicks in the endorphins, and I call it flying. It's better than any kind of drug I've been on, illicit or illicit. It's absolutely fantastic. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought there. Excuse me for a second. It's something that you would definitely need to do with someone who is an experienced piercer, something that you'd want to learn from someone who knows what they're doing, because obviously there are risks involved, and you can hurt, you can actually damage yourself. You can cause harm instead of just what we know is hurt. However, I have to admit, the times I've done it, it's always funny that I'm doing it in a sexual environment. It feels like I should be doing an environment where people are exploring different states of mind, whether through altered mind states through drugs or through meditation. But, I mean, that's just the kind of altered mind state. It is that extreme. Some people it does it for them, some people it doesn't. But I have to say, of all the hacks I have on here, this is probably one of the most extreme hacks I have for pleasure, is play piercing. When I was preparing this, I was talking to my lover, giving the presentation, and my housemate was there in the house. He came over and he's like, yeah, I only did it once, but my God, it was absolutely amazing. So I'm not the only person who does this. There's also then tele and technodildonics. Teledildonics is pretty much what everyone else calls it. I prefer to call it technodildonics because not all of them deal with telephony. Not all of the different types of high-tech sex toys deal with something with the internet, but there are ones that do. There's one called the Oh My God, and there's one that's called the iVibe, which you plug into your your iPod or other MP3 player or other music player, and it basically takes the music and will vibrate in time with the music and work with the music that you're listening to. It will do that. There's one called the Juju and the Sassy. And actually, I just got a chance to read the instruction manual for this one today. But what they will do is they have specific settings, and you can download settings for them from the internet. They're not; these ones don't just vibrate. They also have some, like, a little nubule inside, and you can have it kind of move in different patterns depending. And what's really cool about it is there is a learning mode, and it will learn what you like. And it'll do something, and if you like it, you could tell it to stop there and they like keep doing it and don't stop. You could tell it to move on, or you could tell it to move on to the next one if you don't like what it's doing. And it will remember this and it will put it into a favorites, kind of a favorites mode. And then you could go into that. No, I'm serious. That's actually what it's called. It's called the favorites. And the next time you turn it on, you could tell it to go into favorites mode and it'll do the last five things that you did whenever you put it into the favorites mode. Also, you can email and you can, when you download these different patterns, you can also have somebody else go on the website, create a pattern thing for you, and they can email them to you, and then you can download them onto your vibrator. No, not Bluetooth. I'm actually going to mention that, because if anyone had just heard Renderman's talk over there, he was talking about a Bluetooth vibrator and the different ways that you could totally pwn this and how we need to have greater security in it. He brought up some highly fascinating points. He brought up the point of, let's say someone's Bluetooth vibrator is open, and you go ahead and you hack it and you send them stuff, and they'll go home and they'll say, "Hey, honey, I really like that thing you did at 4 p.m. yesterday." And like, "I didn't do anything at 4 p.m. And it starts bringing about interesting ethical questions. Some of the renderers said that he didn't think it was such a good idea to do this. I personally think that wireless stuff is just fine as long as we secure it. And, you know, the people do a really good job of securing it down. But he brought up fascinating and wonderful points. And certainly you definitely want to talk to him if you want to talk more about that. There was a game put out. I'm sure one of you guys can correct me on this. Guys or girls, sorry. It's called Rez. Did anybody here ever play Rez? What systems was Rez for? Okay, Dreamcast and PS2. Was it for the Xbox? Okay, and it was also for the Xbox. Well, something you could buy for it was called the Rez Transvibrator. Rez was one of the first rhythm games. And there was just this little box that you could plug in, and as you did things in Rez, you could make the little box would pulse and vibrate. And this was a commercially produced toy, and I'm like, they're making a commercial vibrator for an already known system. This is absolutely wonderful. I tried it once. Personally, it wasn't my cup of tea. But there are many people who really liked this. There's also fucking machines, like the Sibian. If you're really interested in fucking machines, unfortunately, I really have to get moving here. If you're interested in fucking machines, I highly recommend fuckingmachines.com. Seriously, fuckingmachines.com. This isn't my big field, but my lover is actually, he's also a sexual researcher and educator in some ways, and this is one of his big fields, so he was telling me about stuff like this. And I think something that I saw on the website was the guy was like, "I was a banker and this was my hobby, and then I realized I could make money at this. And now I'm making money at this. This is amazing, you know? Like, this is my job and I do this." There are many types of fucking machines you can make. There are homemade fucking machines. There's a wonderful book just called Fucking Machines. It's all about people's homemade fucking machines. And there are people who are like, you know, a farmer from Minnesota who, after a long day in the field, comes home and works on this fucking machine that he made out of an old mixer. It's fabulous, the things that people are doing with technology nowadays and sex. There's one called the Simulator. This one is actually internet enabled. It's wireless. You pick out a name for it. You then give that name to whomever you want. They don't need to know your email. They don't need to know anything about you, or they can. And you just give them the name of what you've named your Simulator toy. And they can go onto the website, log in, use this name, and there's a control panel that, if the screenshot I saw was correct, it looks a lot like a race car. It's kind of funny that. And you can control the simulator remotely from, you know, wherever you want on the internet, halfway around the world. There's one called the Thrill Hammer, which looks pretty much like a dentist chair with stirrups with a fucking thing that goes in and out. This one's really expensive, though. It's like, I think they said they can go up to $15,000. on the really high end. The low end model was $1,200. So you're talking expensive here. But if this is your thing, like I said, fuckingmachines.com is for you. There's also real dolls, which earlier today there was actually on the screen downstairs in the mezzanine. There was a video about men and their real dolls. It's a highly accurate model of men or women. Most of them are women. You can get them highly customized. They are made with silicone skin, and they're pretty much as close as you can get to a real human without being a real human these days. But the tele and techno dildonics part comes in with the higher end models. Will have little sensors on their body, and if you do things to certain parts, if you touch them in certain ways, it then elicits a response that makes a certain type of sound or a certain kind of reaction from them. Okay, let's see here. Where's my mouse? I don't have a mouse. Hold on. So that's pretty much all I have right now for body hacking. I'm going to go on to the mind hacking. Do I have any questions yet? Questions, please? Someone? Okay, over there. If you could please step up to the mic somewhere around here. I'm not exactly sure. I can't see because the lights are in my eyes.
Yeah, can you recommend a good tech manual for play piercing?
A good tech manual for play piercing? Yes, I can. I believe it's just called Play Piercing, but I definitely know it's by a person named Deborah Addington. In fact, it might be the only manual out there on play piercing. But play piercing is something that, read the manual, but I highly, highly recommend you find someone else to teach you this. Because it's just something that, if it goes wrong, it can go pretty badly wrong. Anything else?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Please.
We just recently got a Wii, and my husband found a homebrew Wii vibrator program for
excellent.
The Wii.
Excellent.
So it makes your
excellent
Wii remote into a vibrator.
Wonderful.
And it goes perfectly with the Wii condoms.
Wonderful. Hey, that's fantastic. Oh, and one more thing about this. I have to admit, I've been so busy, I don't remember the person who suggested this to me, but someone's like, I had the best idea. You take a Tickle Me Elmo, and you take the Tickle Me part out of it, and you take a vibrator. Well. And if you can get it to vibrate, the Tickle Me dildo. Alright, what's my time? Okay, I'm looking pretty good here. I'm at 9:30. Alright, mind hacking. First thing I'm going to talk about in mind hacking is, whoops, let me get my thing back around here so I can actually see it. Come here, you. There you are. Thank you. First thing I'm going to talk about is erotic hypnosis. First couple things. Yes, hypnosis is real. The people have been getting into hypnotic states for years and years and years. However, the scientific part, they figured out in 2004, a research team in the UK discovered that people in hypnosis should increase activity in multiple areas of the brain, including the left frontal lobe and the anterior cingulate gyrus. Don't know what that means, but there's your research. I have a link if you want to go and find out more. So yes, hypnosis is real. No, people won't make you do anything that you don't want to do in hypnosis. However, you are definitely more open to suggestion. You're definitely more, okay, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, okay, that's okay. Yeah, sure. But usually not to the point of, if it's something that's totally against something you'd want to do, you'll have what's known as an ab reaction, and you will come out of hypnosis. All hypnosis is self-hypnosis. No one can make you become hypnotized. And hypnosis is not sleep. You are aware of what's going on. I know this because I've been hypnotized a number of times myself. You are certainly aware of what's going on around you. It's just usually you feel a more pleasant sensation. Erotic hypnosis can be used in many, many different ways. There are people who are simply turned on by the idea of being hypnotized, so if you've got that going for you, great, there you go, you've already got it. If that's not your thing, hypnosis can be used to play back any sensation that pretty much anyone has already had, whether it's in the form of a hallucination. Well, we think of, you know, hallucinations, seeing things. It can also be feeling things. It can be hearing things. It can be a wide number of, you know, any of your senses. So erotic hypnosis can be used to increase people's pleasure by saying, you know, when I touch, you could do something, you could, after putting someone into hypnosis by using what's known as an induction, You can say, you know, when I touch you here, you're going to feel, you know, you're going to feel pleasure and you're going to feel it tenfold. And every time that I do this, you're going to feel it tenfold more and tenfold more. You can use erotic hypnosis to, I'm sorry, I just blacked out. Hold on a second. You can use erotic hypnosis in ways. You can use it that if you train them, if you use it long enough and you can train people, you can make them come on command. Or you can make them not come on command. You can deny them that and make them keep feeling pleasure until you're ready to give them orgasm. Also, as I said before when I talked about play piercing, erotic hypnosis is something I've learned about recently, I have to admit. But 4 months ago, I met my current lover who is into erotic hypnosis, and he's taught me this. And he also has a friend of his who is a certified hypnotherapist who we've been talking with and stuff like that. And no, simply talking with. And this is probably one of the other greatest hacks I've ever felt for hacking for pleasure. The things you can do with this with the mind when it's been, I guess, properly trained isn't the word I'd use, but when you're properly put in hypnosis and you're put in deep enough, it is mind-blowing. Going back to BDSM, other forms of it, you can use power exchange, which is a way of when you take one person and you give them more control of the situation and you take control away from the other person. The traditional form of this is a master-slave type thing or a dominant-submissive, but there are many different forms of this if those aren't your thing. Personally, I'm not into master-slave. There, you can be a pet or owner. You can be pretty much anything that you can come up with. And this is, for people who are wired this way, this can be a very, very highly erotic thing. Once again, try things. Practice. Do stuff. If it works, great. If it doesn't, move on. Another thing that I'm going to cover is what's known in the BDSM community as mindfuck. The best way I can put mindfuck in, you guys will get this because you're hackers, it's basically social engineering the brain for sex. It's the best way I can put it. There's a form of BDSM play which is known as blade play. It's usually don't cut people with it. It's usually just used as a threat so that people will react erotically to the fear and maybe the touch of the cold steel on their body. So you take somebody and, you know, you tie them up. You take out a really big, scary, scary knife, and you're like, I'm going to use this on you. And then you blindfold them. And then you don't let them hear you putting the knife down, and you take a credit card. Or, went to Crate and Barrel. I got a pot scraper. It was about $2. And you run this over their body, properly, you know, and they think you're using that scary, scary, crazy knife. No, you're using the plastic pot scraper. You got it, Crate and Barrel. This is a form of mindfuck. Mindfuck is an incredibly creative thing. I mean, you can just use your brain and come up with just about anything you could think of for mindfuck. I read an example of somebody who was into vor, which is the idea of being, they are turned on by the idea of being eaten. And there are people, not eaten out, eaten. And there was a lot of mindfuck used in a scene where they were being cooked and they were basted, but what they were basted with was liquid latex, which is something that you can paint on people's bodies and cover them up with. And it was the color of their skin. And they put on multiple layers on the person. And they usually when you do liquid latex, you want to cover someone in oil so that it comes off easy and doesn't stick to your hairs. But they didn't do this. So then later, when they were done, when they carved this person up for eating, they then took a knife and they cut the liquid latex off their skin, and it kind of pulled out their hairs a bit, so they felt like they were being, you know, cut open and skinned like that, for prepared for eating. And apparently this just sent them through the roof. This is another form of mind fuck. Obviously they're not actually preparing this person to being eaten, but it tapped into the right point in their psyche, and it worked for them. So mindfuck pretty much is just the social engineering of sex. Something that I'm going to mention here about BDSM, there's something called headspace. This is basically the, headspace would probably be the BDSM equivalent of hypnosis or of a meditative trance state. It's when your brain gets into that zone. For people who are submissives, they'll call it subspace. For people who are dominance, they'll call it like top space or dom space. And this is pretty much the main place of, you'll just, it feels different for different people. I don't know if there is any, has been any kind of scientific study on this, because it's really hard to get scientific studies on sex oftentimes. But, you know, there are so many BDSM practitioners who will say, yes, no, this is real, and this is how it feels for me. Headspace is this main place of BDSM, and I'm bringing this up because I'm about to go into the sexual and the sexual spiritual thing. There are many, many different paths that have some form of sexual spirituality. There's tantric sex, which I'm sure you may have heard of already. There are different types of pagan that deal with some kind of sexual spiritual thing. There's a static Christian. Pretty much most religions, sometimes it's not something you hear about very much, will have some form of this. I mentioned before Headspace, and I did this because personally I've had spiritual meditative mind space. It feels very similar to the same BDSM Headspace. I was raised Catholic, and I've been in church before, and I've been praying, and I just go into this place with my head, and I'm like, you know what? This feels a lot like being in subspace. Huh, that's interesting. So, especially from the people who are like, oh, you know, you can't, you know, we do BDSM and we're better than this, you know, and, you know, people go to church and they sit there and they have a man in a robe, give him a cracker and stuff. And I'm like, okay, I'm doing that man in a robe and a cracker thing, and I'm feeling the same thing I feel in BDSM. Okay, obviously there are just many different paths to the same kind of feeling good, and that's kind of what I talked about, obviously. And there's also the idea of spiritual experience as sexual experience, as I just described. This was, when I'm in church and this happens to me, it is a similar headspace, and there are many ways of feeling good, and my talk isn't just about sexual pleasure, it's about all different types of pleasure. And this is another one of that. I'll be honest, this has never been a really big field of study for me. If you're interested in this, I can give you links and other places to go to, people who are really into this. Next, we have sexual role play. I have two really good notes here on sexual role play, and I think I'm just going to read them directly out loud. I put, by letting yourself be someone else, you can step into their sexual experiences and feel things from a different point of view. And by letting yourself be someone else, you can experience some of your greatest fantasies. Sexual role play is something I have an incredible amount of experience with because it's something I've done since my first sexual experiences. And the best thing that I can do to people recommend is sit down, think about some of the things that are your fantasies. Think about the things, possibly the things you masturbate to. Find a partner who's willing to do this. Ask them what their fantasies are. See where they interact and try them out together. First couple times you do it, you might feel a little silly. It's okay to feel silly. It's okay to laugh. I mean, people take sex so seriously. It's nothing serious. Laugh. It's okay. Get it out of your system, and then just try to get yourself back into that headspace. There's as many different fantasies as there are people. You can have the more, quote, usual fantasies of, you know, doctor, patient, or maybe, you know, sexy school teacher, naughty student, stuff like that. But, I mean, this is obviously a geeky community, and I mean, there are many different people with many different fandoms, and if that's your thing, go for it. Personally, I'm a big Doctor Who fan. You can bet your butt I do Doctor Who roleplay in the bedroom. I'm sorry? Funny you should mention that. Going back to the hypnosis thing, I know people who are into erotic hypnosis that are also into Doctor Who, and they will use this to be their erotic treasure. Like, you could point this at someone's head. For some people, you know, if this is the thing they've set up, you can point at their head. And they just start convulsing. So there's nothing wrong. I mean, remember, this is your time in the bedroom. So you know what? If you want to get it on with a Cylon, go ahead. Get it on with a Cylon. That's just fine. No one has to know. And you know what? Maybe letting someone know, they might say, hey, that is pretty hot. You want to join in? Sure, you know? I'm going to talk about cybersexuality next. I've mentioned the fucking machines already before. There's been cyber sex, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm sure there's been cyber sex as long as we've had the first BBSs, as long as we've had the first emails. Maybe the first email was hello world, but the second was hey baby, what are you doing tonight? I mean,
what are you wearing?
There you go, what are you wearing? Maybe that was the first SMS message, I don't know. So people have been using the internet to have sex and to talk about sexual things for a very, very long time. Back in the big days of news groups, you know, alt.sex.whatever was a huge, huge thing. Hell, the technosexuals, the people who are into robots and other things like that, they still identify as ASFR, alt.sex.fetish.robot. It's just a term they've gone by. They name themselves after a defunct news group. However, a lot of this stuff it's been mainly text. You know, IRC, you'll go on and you'll have cyber sex with someone. You'll IM them or you'll exchange emails. So all this is just text, but as we explore, I hate to say Web 2.0, please don't hurt me. But as we explore Web 2.0 and as we explore the different things that we're able to do nowadays, it's getting to be more than that. And I'd like to bring up Second Life. Second Life, to those who have not been on it, it's a environment where you can basically create your avatar to look like literally anything you want it to look like at any time. You can change gender, you can change species, you can be a giant walking hot dog. It's perfect for the fetishists, and it's an interactive community where you can go different places, see different things, talk to people, do different people, and it's absolutely perfect for fetishists, it's absolutely perfect for erotic roleplay. Pretty much any kind of fetish you can imagine is already on Second Life. And it's because of just this ability to change and do whatever you want, it allows people to go wild. It just, to really delve into their fetishes and to delve into their fantasies. And even if you're all curious, you know, make sure your video card can support it and go on. There certainly is a learning curve to Second Life. It's a pretty steep one, but once you get over that, it's wonderful. You can meet so many different people and you can have so much fun. I mean, personally, I consider myself gender fluid. I consider myself a person who's sometimes male and sometimes female. And I love Second Life because in one moment I can be a girl, and three clicks later, I'm a guy. I have donned a male avatar, I have gone into an all gay male sex area, and I've had gay sex. And this isn't something I could do in real life. Yes, I play Second Life too much, thank you. This isn't something I could do in real life. Now, of course, I don't know. Maybe the other person on the other end was a woman. I'll never know, because I may never run into that person ever again. But it's a place that really lets you explore and be what you want to be and explore what you want to explore. See, I'm going to talk about fetishes next. Talking about this talk on the Hope Forum. Hold on a second. Got to scroll down here. There we are. Talking about this on the Hope Forum, somebody mentioned when I said, hey, you know, I'm approaching this talk from kind of a free software, open source kind of mindset. What would you like to hear me talk about? Somebody mentioned fetishes, and they asked me a couple questions, and I'd like to answer them. They said, if you were someone else, I'm sorry, why are we wired this way? Why do people have fetishes? And the answer to this is, honestly and short, who knows? We don't know yet. There hasn't been enough research. Some people think we were born this way. Other people think that there were environmental influences. But, you know, one person might see that environmental influence, and another person might have the exact same experience, and the one person is their fetish, and the other person is not. We don't really know. But let's be honest. Who cares? I mean, it's fascinating to think about, but a lot of times whenever you start going down this path, people will then try to cure you of your fetish. And there's no reason. As long as you're not hurting anybody, it's all good. It's really just all good. Hacking the mind with fetishes, if you or someone else has a really decent, strong fetish, this is probably the best way to hack their sexuality. Because of the very nature of what a fetish is versus just having like a passing interest. I mean, there are, obviously, this is not news to you, there are many men who are interested in breasts on women. This is not news. I know, it's hard to believe. However, there are some men that breasts are their fetish. I mean, it just, for some of them, the larger the breast, the better. And it just, I mean, just thinking about it or talking about it will really start to make them hard. It all depends on the extent of how much you're into something. Let's see here. They also asked, you know, how do you find other fetishes? Some fetishes have a visible symbol in the gay male subculture, the gay male leather subculture, which is another form of kink. They have something called a hanky code, wherein one will wear... Wherein one will wear a handkerchief or a bandana of a certain color in their back left or back right pocket, depending on what they like to do with that fetish. And red is fisting, and yellow is golden showers, urination. And it's gotten to the point, though, that there are so many different subtle shades of color. It's like, well, are you wearing peach or apricot? Because the one means, because, you know, if you're wearing tan there, you've got a cigar fetish. But if you're wearing apricot, you're a chubby chaser and you like fat people. So, I mean, it's starting to get to that point. I mentioned the technosexuals earlier, the ASFRs, and they've decided on a wind-up key, like from an old clock or something like that, to represent their symbol, to let them find other fetishes. Another way to find fetishes, go to BDSM events and ask around. Find out there's a local club in your area, and you might be thinking, you know, I live in the middle of nowhere, I'm not going to have a club. I live personally in the Washington, D.C. area, and I know my club's in the area, but I also know that there's a club called WIP, West Virginia Humans into Perversion. So there are clubs in the middle of nowhere. I grew up in the middle of nowhere in Pennsylvania, and I found out that there is a kinky group of people who get together not too far from where I grew up, which is kind of cool. But they are everywhere. If you do live in an area that is in the middle of nowhere, I recommend going to your local large city, find out what their BDSM club is, and then go from there and ask them, hey, is there anybody meeting up my way? And you might find out about a munch, which is where people meet for lunch, and it's totally casual, there's no play involved. They just talk. They sit there and they talk about whatever, and they just get to know each other. There might be a happy hour or something you can go to. But really, the easiest way to do it is find people online. There's pretty much an online presence for just about any fetish you can imagine. And I probably should have said this earlier, but fetishes can be about anything you can imagine. There is a fetish for every single body part. There's a fetish for people who are into really skinny people. There's a fetish for people who are into really fat people. There's a fetish for objectification, becoming a human chair or something like that. There's a fetish for people who are into balloons. There are fetishes who are into people who are being eaten. These are all real ones that I've studied, and I'm just thinking off the top of my head. There are fetishes for people who want to have sex with robots. There are fetishes for people who are into some kind of mind control, whether it's real or imaginary. There's the erotic hypnosis fetish I mentioned. There's basically anything you could think of as a fetish. I'm sure, everyone's already heard of necrophilia, but I'm sure there's someone somewhere who has a coffin fetish, or maybe even a flower fetish. So that's pretty much anything you could think of. And if you want to hear more about fetishes, rare fetishes are kind of just an interest of mine. I think they're fascinating, and we can certainly talk about them more in the other room. But finding people online is pretty much the easiest way. The way you should go about it is find out what it's called, because, like, the people who are into really fat people, this one is called Chubby Chasers. It's called FA, or Fat Admiration. No, you got to know the lingo. So do a little bit of searching online, do a little bit of research, find out what they call themselves, and then start looking for that. And you'll find chat and bulletin boards, and it'll get you in touch with people. And then you can start talking to people and finding out if there's anyone in your area who's specifically into your fetish. That's pretty much all I have. And oh my God, I have extra time. Yes. Before I end, I'd like to give a thanks to a bunch of people, some of them who are here, some of them who aren't. I'd like to really thank my partner, Winter Rose, who couldn't be here. He gave me a lot of really invaluable advice about erotic hypnosis and about technosexuality. I'd like to thank his housemate, Wise Guy, who gave me a lot of information about hypnosis. I'd like to thank Renderman for, just before my talk, about an hour and a half, telling me about that wonderful little Bluetooth dildo thing? That was great. I'd like to thank, David, who let me run my presentation by him, and who let me borrow his laptop. Thank you so much. My friend, One Who Frees, who I asked to give my presentation to, my roommate, Harvey, and all my friends I talk sex with. And I'd like to thank all of you that requested my talking about sex again, because I'm rather poor right now, and I got to get into the con for free. Yay, thank you. And the people who chose the talk, thank you. And all of you who are here and listening. The last time I gave a talk on sex, I got heckled, and you guys really didn't heckle me, and I really appreciate it.
And we've got 10 more minutes.
And you have 10 more minutes. How the hell do you like that? I'd like to put the floor open for questions again. And after this, I'd like anybody who's interested to go over to the impromptu talk room, and we can talk about sex. It'll be fun. Do I have any questions for anybody? If so, just start going to the mics, because I can't see anyone's hands. If you have any kind of questions, if anything I didn't talk about, anything I did talk about, go to the mic. Ask me some questions. Let's go here. Oh, come on. Someone has to have something. Oh, yeah, people are moving. This is good. Anything? No?
Yeah, all right. I have a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
What would be a good website to learn about erotic hypnotism?
Thank you. That's a really good question. Actually, what I forgot to mention is that I'm going to have a page up for more information about all of these fetishes. Not just all these fetishes, for all of the information up at cableflame.googlepages.com. Right now, it's just some crap that I put up there like a year and a half ago, so it's not there yet. I haven't had time. However, your specific one on erotic hypnotism, let's see here. Oh, I don't remember off the top of my head. There's a podcast by a woman who goes by Lady Ruetha. It's called the Realm of Bliss podcast, and it's probably one of the best podcasts. It's probably the best source I could think of for that. I also have a whole 2 pages of erotic hypnotism stuff because of my lover who has given presentations with other people before, and I have their list of things, so I can certainly get that to you.
So me and my partner recently found out that she's allergic to her hormonal birth control.
Okay.
And I was wondering if you know of any non-hormonal birth control methods other than condoms.
Okay. Personally, I have this problem too. I can't handle hormonal birth control. It totally messes me up. You can get an IUD, the copper one. However, this one can cause problems if your uterus isn't big enough. They only make them in one size, and because in America they're pretty much only recommended for people who've had childbirth. In Europe, they're used for all women, so this may or may not work for her. This person, I went to get one, and it didn't work for me because my uterus is too small. So there are cervical caps. There are diaphragms. These are not always the best method because there are certain things you have to go through, and they're better for like occasional sex once in a while, not like, you know, if you're really hot for each other, like, you know, a couple of fucking sessions in a couple of hours. It doesn't really work so well for that because of the way that they work. I wish I had better advice for you because I'm in the same spot, and there isn't any perfect solution if you can't do hormonal. I'm sorry. Yeah, there are female condoms, but those also have some of their own issues with them, and they're very expensive, unfortunately.
Just another recommendation for vibrators for girls, the rabbit, my favorite.
Some people really like the rabbit, my personal experiences with them. Some women
rabbit
love
fans.
Them.
Like, nice.
This is the personal thing. Some women love them to the heck. I tried one, and my vaginal walls held onto it, and instead of it spinning inside of me, the outside, the handle part, was spinning around and around and around. I'm like, okay, I'll hold onto the handle tighter so I make it spin in me, and I did. And then when it started feeling good, I'm like, oh, and of course my body starts to relax, and my hand loosens up, and it starts going like this again. So maybe I just, because I got a cheap one. It works for some women, it doesn't work for others.
Yeah, that part doesn't work really well, but the clapping?
The little vibration part?
Yeah, in the...
Personally, I found that I don't like battery-operated vibes because they feel too buzzy to me. This is something that I probably should have mentioned earlier. One thing that I found is that they always mention vibrators. If you've never orgasmed before, women, get a vibrator. There are some women that have hypersensitive clitorises. Vibrators feel bad to them. Vibrators might not get you off. And I'm only saying this just because I was one of these people, and I read all these books, and they kept saying vibrators, 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 and I'm like... I'm a sexual educator, and I was still feeling really bad. I'm like, what's wrong with me? It doesn't work for me. And, of course, eventually I did find the Attaching Magic Wand, and I realized that I just needed something not so buzzy. But do you know that there are some women that don't like having their clitoris touched with or played with too much because it's too super sensitive? That's okay. It's just another variation. Any other questions or anything? Any comments?
Yeah, I've got one question.
Sure.
Have you, or for the pleasurable...
play piercing?
No, the piercing. Like, not piercing, but the
play piercing.
Play piercing, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, the play piercing, okay.
Have you ever done any acupuncture yourself, or have you linked that to any acupuncture stuff?
Never done any acupuncture. I'll admit, this is just from what I've seen of acupuncture on TV, that when I've seen actual examples of real acupuncture, they put stuff in like this. This play piercing is usually not in the arm, actually. It's usually in more fatty places like the breasts, the back, the buttocks, the upper arms. And it is something that goes underneath the skin. And I've actually found people who are intrigued by the idea of having some kind of technological implant in their body. You have metal in your skin for a while, and you can see it. It leaves little raised marks while it's in you, and you kind of touch it there, and if that's your thing, if that's something that excites you about possibly in the future, it's really cool.
Also on acupuncture, unless it's something that you really, really like the idea of, it's not going to trigger the endorphins. It's not what it's for.
Actually, I'm going to have to disagree with that because the first time I tried it, I was scared. I was scared out of my mind, and it wasn't something I've ever fantasized about before. I'm the kind of person, Stop. Okay. Let's take this to the other room. Okay, wait a second. I need to say here. I'm getting the larger room. Which is called
egress.
What? Egress.
I'm not getting Zeus.
I'm not getting Zeus. I'm getting egress. Going because there is another talk. Certainly. Like I said, this is not something I ever finished. Okay.
Oh, you're so lucky I didn't ask questions.
You can ask yours later. It's not something I ever fantasized about. It's something that actually scared me and that didn't turn me on, but it still can do that. It's just getting clay piercing.
I'm a clay piercing.